In New York, anti-Wall Street demonstrations have grown in the last 3 weeks and spread to other cities in the US as protesters make their point about unfairness in the US economy. Specifically, the banks, bailed out in 2008, are doing pretty well, while ordinary people struggle. Meanwhile, similar protests can be seen in Greece, among other European countries. Greece is the country of origin of Kostas Paniatakis, who now teaches sociology at the College of Technology at the City University of New York. He's got a book coming out shortly called Remaking Scarcity, From Capitalist Inefficiency to Economic Democracy. I asked him for his take on, first of all, what's happening in Wall Street.
This is a great movement, a very hopeful movement, pioneered by young people. It has been going on since September 17, and now, of course, it is spreading around the country. And also, we also have the development that many of the labor unions in New York City are expressing their support for the movement. There was a great demonstration last Wednesday. Lots of people, great energy. And I think it reflects partly, of course, a response to the crisis, but also a response to the undemocratic nature of our economic system that this crisis has disclosed, where we see the people causing the crisis being protected by the government and everybody else basically left to fend for themselves, either losing their homes, being unemployed, being forced to, sort of suffer the consequences of the austerity policies that are spreading around the world.
What it seems to share with the protests in your own home country of Greece is a general disillusionment with the political system more than any kind of partisan protest, yeah?
Yeah, I think what the crisis has shown is that the political and the economic elites that have been running this global neoliberal model cannot be trusted to make the decisions that affect all of our lives and that will determine our future, the future of young people, the future of the planet, and so on and so forth. And I think there has been a kind of delegitimization of these economic and political elites. And one of the ways that this appears is that in many of these movements, one of the central themes is the theme of self-organization, direct democracy, people not just having specific demands, we want this and that, but also having this demand that we should be able to take our lives in our own hands and make ourselves collectively make the decisions that affect our lives.
It sounds very idealistic, and it's quite hard to get a handle on exactly what the protesters want.
Yeah, I think, different people may have different ideas and different specific demands. At the same time, the New York General Assembly, on their website, they do have a kind of analysis of their grievances, and there is a general feeling that basically the political system is dominated by corporations, and that the principle driving our lives and the way the economy operates is the principle of profit rather than human needs. So, and there is probably some debate among the people participating, as to the very idea of making demands. Like the idea of making a demand on the government is basically telling them, we want that, you make the decision, you do that. It sort of presupposes that there is a kind of separation between the people and those who make the decisions. The people make demands and someone else makes the decisions. And I think that's this is a kind of separation that parts of the movement want to challenge. And this is why I think some people are sort of uneasy about making demands. But the grievances are pretty clear. What they are against is pretty clear. And then, of course, what many people, not just in New York, but in other parts of the world, that was in Athens where I observed the assemblies, there is a sense that in order to get these demands, you will never get these demands by appealing to the powers that be, to political, economic elites. You will only get these demands if there is a sort of change towards direct democracy that allows everybody to participate in decision-making. Now, I think it's true that you cannot have an either-or way of approaching that question, that there is a way of trying to put pressure on governments by making demands and winning demands that democratize the state, that keep politicians more accountable. And if you sort of are successful in achieving that and having more accountable governments, then these governments are more likely to facilitate the creation of autonomous social spaces that work according to a logic that goes against the logic of capital, and it's a more democratic.
It's still relatively amorphous. You called it a great and hopeful movement, but what do you think it could achieve?
Well, I think first of all, one of the reasons it's a hopeful movement is till very recently, people were pointing out the contrast between the rest of the world, where there was rebellion and there was revolt, and the United States, where not much seemed to be happening. I think the fact that people are on the move, they're expressing their dissatisfaction with what is going on, is hopeful. At the beginning of this crisis, many people compared this crisis to the Great Depression. One of the things that happened in the Great Depression is the eventual upsurge of popular movements that forced, for example, in the U.S., President Roosevelt to change his trajectory and to institute the kind of New Deal policies that were pro-people New Deal policies rather than pro-business New Deal policies. And he did that because of this movements, because of the pressure of these movements. And I think one of the hopeful things about the movement is that it may sort of show that finally this crisis is leading people, ordinary Americans, to basically express their dissatisfaction.
Am I right in suggesting that most of the people who are protesting, almost all of the people who are protesting, are people who voted for the Democrats and for Barack Obama in 2008?
Well, I think there is a diversity of people. I think it's true that lots of young people, lots of progressive people trusted Obama. They were very hopeful about what Obama could achieve. And Obama, of course, promised, change. And at times in his campaign, he sort of adopted a kind of populist rhetoric of talking about distributing the wealth, talking about against trickle-down economics. And, of course, what he has actually done has been very disappointing because in many ways he followed the policies of President Bush.
For arguable reasons. I mean, Obama, of course, claims that it's the Republicans that really stopped him doing what he wanted to do. But it's a big risk for protesters, is it not, at this particular stage in your electoral cycle, to take to the streets and risk undermining the Democrats and reinforcing the Republicans?
Personally, I don't believe that. I mean, I think when there is popular pressure on the street, it is more likely to put pressure on both parties. And I think the only way to have Democrats do something that really represents the interest of the majority rather than, Wall Street fundraisers, is if they feel that they don't have any other choice. And I think, frankly, what is going on right now is there is a lot of anger among the population in the United States, and there is a struggle over how this anger will be channeled, over how the causes of the crisis will be defined. The right wing has tried to channel this anger by scapegoating various people, scapegoating government spending, scapegoating immigrants, scapegoating public sector workers. And I think it is necessary to have a kind of countervailing movement that basically works against this kind of obscurantist definition of what this crisis is all about. And I think the frame of the 99% versus the 1% that Occupy Wall Street uses is very correct, is very effective, because this is what has happened in the last 30 years. This is what neoliberalism has done. To the extent there has been growth, it has the overwhelming sort of bulk of this growth has benefited the very rich. The middle class, it has their incomes have stagnated. Its numbers are shrinking, and poor people, working class people, have seen their incomes go down, their labor rights taken away. So I think it's a big crisis, and it will not be resolved in the interest of the majority if the majority does not speak up and put pressure on those who have power.
In Greece, obviously Greece has its own particular issues with the European Union and the IMF, but do you see the issues there as substantively the same?
Well, I think in some ways there are similarities, because we see this kind of austerity policy spreading around the world. In some ways, Greeks are the guinea pigs. They're sort of, it's where this policy has begun. It's basically a global crisis, it's a European crisis, it's not just a Greek crisis. Again, you see similar sort of attempts to scapegoat specific groups in Greece, like public sector workers, and the government is trying to turn different groups of workers against each other. But the fact is that what is happening in Greece is a very brutal austerity program that is basically trying to further entrench the neoliberal free market model that created this crisis. And, of course, it is not working. And
well, I know, Kostas, you know that it is argued that what created the crisis for Greece is Greece living way beyond its means, employing vast numbers of public servants, putting them on the public payroll as some kind of political kickback, and nobody paying proper taxes, and so on and so forth.
Well, the problem of taxes is a real one, and it has to do with inability and unwillingness of Greek governments, of both major parties, to basically tax the people who have money. The thing about the public sector, though, there is a lot of ideology that is going on there, and the government itself sort of came in trying to prove how many people there were, and they said they were going to count them all. They counted them all. They found that the number was not as high as they had claimed, and they found that as a percentage of the labor force in Greece, the percentage of public sector workers in Greece is within the same range as in all European countries. So the public sector, there is oftentimes mainstream media talk about the bloated public sector in Greece. The public sector in Greece is similar to other European countries. All developed economies have a larger public sector than low-income countries for various reasons, including the rise of welfare states and so on and so forth, but also the use of the state to subsidize capital. So what is going on right now, it's a brutal attack on the public sector in Greece, that will not make Greece like other European countries. It will make Greece like low-income countries that tend to have lower public sectors. So this is an important thing to keep in mind.
The protests in Greece started way back. I mean, we've seen assemblies, self-organized assemblies, as you said earlier, in public squares in Greece for a long time. Were you surprised when America, less known for these kind of protests, started having them as well?
Yeah, I think it is, again, an interesting development. It's true in Greece and Europe there is a more developed sort of political culture of the left. I mean, in some ways, perhaps the similarities between the U.S. and Greece may seem surprising to some extent, but on the other hand, given what is going on right now, it would be surprising if we didn't have protests. And that's why, till very recently, the question in people's minds was not, the main thing...
Not why, but why not?
Right, why not? I mean, and there were, like, the same way I'm having an interview with you right now, I've had interviews with other radio shows where the question was, why aren't we revolting like everybody else is revolting? Since we are facing the same crisis, and we are seeing the government primarily protecting those responsible for the crisis rather than the people who are the true victims of the crisis. So, and, you know, I mean, in a globalized world, I think there is also a kind of a youth culture that sort of spreads. And, of course, young people today are very sort of media savvy, the internet and so on and so forth. So I think that there is an element of that as well. But ultimately, it goes, I think, to the delegitimization of, you know, political and economic elites that increase, and the fact that young people today and around the world are seeing that the way society and the economy is being managed is creating a very bleak future for them. So in that context, it is not surprising that young people would increasingly try to mobilize and protest and basically claim the right to participate in the decisions that will affect their lives.
But they're going to have to come up with some kind of solid demands. And I know that you said that it's not an issue of demanding certain things from the government, but something needs to happen in order for the protesters to feel like it's been worthwhile. What could that be?
Well, I think there are lots of things that that have to happen. What will determine whether the protesters will, persist in the future? It's hard to say. I mean, what has been happening is that this movement has been growing, and there is a certain outline of what people want. People are talking about they want democracy. They don't want the political system to be basically completely dominated by the principle of profit and the desires and priorities of the few. And, I mean, you know, this is a clear demand. Perhaps it's a sort of, it goes to the heart of the issue. And, you know, there are other sort of things that I think are consistent with this movement. This movement is growing. It is becoming very diverse. And different groups have different demands within it. I mean, things like taxing the rich and things like, defending people's rights, labor rights, and so on, the environment. And,
in other words, I mean, it's a bit of a lightning rod for everybody to protest about anything they feel unhappy about. I mean, is there a cohesive force?
Well, in my view, these problems boil down to the fact that we live in a society that is driven by the principle of profit for the few. I mean, and this principle basically creates many of these problems. It creates political corruption. It creates environmental, a deepening ecological crisis. It creates growing inequality. And I think people are increasingly aware of this.
So you're saying that people may be protesting about a variety of symptoms, but they are relatively united about the cause?
Well, I think different people have you know, a different analysis and part of what the movement is all about. The movement is a sort of a dynamic process where the people who participate in the movement become different people in the process, and hopefully, as a result of this process, they become more and more capable of analyzing, of coming up with more and more insightful analysis of what is going on, and more capable of making decisions and actively participating in political processes. And
you know, a lot of people,
in Occupy Wall Street are much more insightful, in my view, about what is going on in the U.S. and in the world than, you know, the average person in the U.S. or around the world who just gets their understanding just by reading, you know, mainstream media, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, who, not surprisingly, have a very sort of biased interpretation of what is going on in those movements.
A lot of those biased interpreters say, yes, but who is in charge? Who's in charge? If nobody's in charge, then what's the point? It's this kind of inchoate movement. Does that matter, that nobody's in charge, that it's self-organized, that it has no figurehead leader?
Well, I think this is the issue. The moment you have a division of the population between few leaders who make decisions and everybody who follows orders, you know, what you will get is what we have gotten right now. We have all these very educated politicians and CEOs and financiers, and of course, what did we get? We get a massive disaster. They may be very glib when they appear in front of TV, but of course what they are doing is to create a system, a house of cards, that works well for them, because even when they mess up, they get bailed out, and the rest of us have to basically, you know, pay the price. So people realize that you cannot have a democracy when very few people make the decisions and everybody else follows order. So it's a great experiment. It's a sort of realization that we need to do things differently, structure our economy in a very different way, and sort of reinvent the political processes that we use to make decisions. Because what we have right now is not working for the vast majority of the population in this world.
That was Kostas Panayiotakis in New York.